What's up and welcome back to the Secret Sauce Podcast. What's the best speech you ever heard? How did it make you feel? I bet it was some mixture of inspired, hopeful, motivated, enlightened. What if I told you could make people feel the same way every time you spoke? Being an excellent communicator isn't something reserved just for keynote speakers. Do you want your next team meeting to be more meaningful? Do you want your next one-on-one to drive more action? Do you want life's most important lessons to resonate with your kids? Do you want to make your friend's belly laugh the next time you tell a story? Regardless of where you're communicating, my guest today, Eva Daniel, can help you level up. Eva has empowered some of the world's most influential speakers, from producing a podcast for Focus on the Family, to writing speeches for Dave Ramsey, and most recently, founding The Speak Shop, where she helps leaders build out content and deliver killer speeches. She's going to share the questions you need to prepare for your next opportunity to influence and what you should never be doing when communicating to large audiences. Stay locked in until the very end of the conversation for details about a really cool giveaway from Eva. Let's dive in. I'm selfishly extremely fired up for my conversation today. If you were to somehow figure out the password to my LinkedIn, if you were to hack my LinkedIn account and you were to go into saved posts, you would see that probably about 60% of those saved posts belong to my guest today, Eva Daniel. She is just out here putting so much value and adding so much value to people through the content that she's producing specifically on communication that I could not recommend higher going and following Eva Daniel on LinkedIn. If you don't have a LinkedIn yet and you're listening, hit pause, go create your LinkedIn profile. First step, follow Eva, and then come back and hit play on this podcast. But Eva, thank you so much for joining the podcast today. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. Thanks for your kind words about LinkedIn. I think that my parents are still shocked that I've made a career talking about talking. So on LinkedIn every day, I just post tips about public speaking and communication, and it's a lot of fun.
Well, I believe regardless of what position you're in life or what title you hold, speaking is so critically important. And I know we're going to talk a lot about that. I'm not going to steal any of your thunder here, Eva, but I do want to hop into it. I almost just want to, you know, hit record and just let you riff for the next 30 minutes because I think that you could do that. But I do have questions that I'm going to ask you today. And my first question is a standing question here on the podcast. I have to know, what is Eva's go-to sauce when you walk inside of a Chick-fil-A?
Just the Chick-fil-A sauce. It's amazing. Just the plain Chick-fil-A sauce and ketchup for the French fries. You have to have ketchup for the French fries.
Great combo there. If you had to label your secret sauce now and the way that you uniquely add value to all the people that you serve and that you lead, what would you label that secret sauce?
I would say it's helping people level up their content in a speech. A lot of focus is put on the delivery side of public speaking. That's so important. I love helping clients do that as well. But my biggest passion and my greatest strength is helping people level up their content, figuring out someone has all of the pieces that make a great speech. They're just not organized in the most compelling, interesting way. And so my greatest strength is coming in and helping clients figure out how can you tell your stories better? How can you arrange your speech better? What is your speech missing from a content perspective to really level it up?
That's really interesting, Eva, because I think that people step away from speaking, you know, and maybe they felt nervous or maybe they felt anxious during the speech. And I think many people would attribute that to a way that I delivered my speech or the way that I spoke or the body language that I had. But what you're saying is it's rooted in content, correct?
I believe so, because a lot of times what we think are these delivery challenges, like you just said, it's nerves or filler words come in or you ramble or you lose your train of thought or you don't know what to do with your hands or you don't know how to move on the stage. And a lot of times those can all directly be tied back to content. You're not clear in your own mind what you're trying to say, how you're trying to say it. Maybe you haven't layered in some storytelling or some humor, or you haven't created some sort of memorable, sticky statements throughout your speech. And so it's going to be hard to deliver something that is not refined refined and elevated. Now, that's not to say that delivery is not important. Delivery is very important. I just would say a lot of times people focus way too much on working on their delivery without really thinking through their content and getting that clarity around what they're trying to say.
I think about even times that I've spoken in the past where I wasn't satisfied with the outcome. And if I really trace it back to the root, I think it was a lack of confidence in the content. You know, maybe I procrastinated, or maybe I didn't spend enough time organizing it in the right way. But that's awesome. Eva, I'd love for you to share just a little bit of your journey in communication with our audience today. I think it'll give more context for key principles that you have to share with our audience.
Yeah. So most recently, before starting my own business about a year and a half ago, I was a speechwriter for Dave Ramsey and his team of speakers. And through that experience, I just learned so much about public speaking. Before that, I was a radio podcast producer for almost 15 years. I was in the radio space. I loved it. I was a news anchor during college, which sounds so much sexier than it actually was. I went to college in a small rural town. I'm pretty sure there's about 6 listeners to any time I was on the air. But it gave me just a lot of appreciation for radio and podcasting. And I was also on the traveling forensics team, not like the cutting up dead people science side of forensics, but the public speaking side forensics. So I'd travel with other college kids all across the country doing all of these little speech tournaments throughout college. And so I've really had a passion for public speaking, communication, even since I was a kid. My biggest thing is I love storytelling. When I was a kid, I would just write stories and read a lot of stories, loved reading, voracious reader, and just really loved, as I've gone professionally, I just love helping people figure out, you know, the stories that are inside them and how they can be expressed outward. And really the catalyst for starting my own business, even though it was just a year and a half ago, started in my late 20s. I was a radio podcast producer, and I would vet potential radio guests. And so I was looking for booking the talent. And so I would call up these authors and these speakers that had written incredible books. And I just did pre-interviews to see if they'd be a good fit for a radio program. And time after time after time, I would get someone on their phone interviewing them. And here they had been able to capture it in a book, even getting a traditional publisher. And then when I'd get them on the phone, they couldn't take those stories to life in a communication way. And so I knew, even since my late 20s, I was like, I want to start my own business and just really help people figure out ways to tell their better stories. Because I feel like stories are what shape our cultures, and the stories that we tell ourselves, the stories we tell other people are so important.
Mm-hmm. And, storytelling is not just reserved for a keynote speech or when you get the opportunity to step on a stage. What are some of the other opportunities, Eva, that you would say that we have to be able to share stories in a compelling way that would maybe tug on somebody's heartstrings or stir somebody's soul?
Exactly. Well, I mean, I think one thing, you know, sometimes even just the type of public speaking, it sounds so formal, or giving talks. And a lot of us, what public speaking looks like, we're in a meeting with 3, 5, 6 people in person or virtual, and we're just sharing our opinions or our thoughts or the work that we've done or our stories. And I think it's really important for everyone, especially every leader. I know it's a lot of leaders listening to this podcast, knowing your company's story, being able to tell your company's story in an interesting, compelling way. You may or may not have been the founder. It can be more challenging if you're sharing a story of the company when you didn't start the company, but learning how to do that is really important for you as a leader, and also knowing how to tell your story within the company. Why do you work where you do? What are you passionate about your work? What drives you to get up in the morning? And so using these little reps in meetings, just in conversations, trying out stories at your friends, you know, at dinner parties or your family, but just kind of getting in a pattern of telling stories more. A lot of times we think that we're telling stories, but we're actually kind of just giving people a list of linear facts that aren't even interesting. And so really learning the art of storytelling will help advance you, whatever your level, whatever your title, within your job.
Mm-hmm. And I even think about personal application. Like I think about, you know, when I'm at dinner and I'm just communicating with my family and my kids, how I communicate matters. And so if I truly want to make a difference within my family or within my friend group or wherever it is, I think these principles are applicable in many different areas. I think back to what you just shared, Eva, you talking about telling your company's story and how critical that is for culture building. As I think about two of maybe the most recognizable leadership cultures in the world, I think number one has got to be Chick-fil-A. It's just the way that they do leadership inside of Chick-fil-A is so impressive and exceptional. I would tie the why back to a trip that I had to the Chick-fil-A Support Center. And I remember walking in for the first time and the front desk worker at the Chick-fil-A Support Center, the person who was like printing off badges for people, started telling me stories about Truett Cathy, who is the founder of Chick-fil-A. And so I think part of the reason for their success, a big part of the reason for their success is one, they have really focused on telling the organization's story extremely well in a compelling way that makes people buy in, makes people want to wrap their arms around it. But then to level up on that, they've helped empower and teach people how to re-communicate those stories in a way that's special to them. And the same thing, I was at Disney World with my family 2 weeks ago, and I was asking one of the employees, how do they get everybody on board? Like, how do you get everybody bought into creating these magical moments for families throughout these parks? It could be a popcorn station worker creating memorable moments for families. And the employee, the cast member said, well, it starts with the first day that we show up to work. All 8 hours is spent telling us stories about Walt Disney and his conviction for why he wanted to create the parks in the first place. And they tell it in such a way that it's impossible not to buy in and want to create moments like Walt created all that time ago for families today. So I just to share some very practical examples of other company cultures who have done this really, really well. I think what you're saying is totally valid. I want to get into some of the things that I have gleaned the most amount of value from you on, Eva. I think the perception, outside perception, could be you go and you hear a great communicator, and maybe in your mind you're just thinking, oh, they're just really charismatic, or they just have such a good way with words. It comes so natural to them. Do you think, Eva, do you think speaking is natural? There's people who got it and who don't, or do you think that it's a craft that you have to hone? You've worked with a lot of communicators, a lot of really impressive people in the leadership space. What have you seen up close and personal from some of those top communicators?
I would say most of the time it's something that they've been very intentional on. Some people do have a little bit more of an it factor, if you want to call it that. When they get on the stage, they are maybe more dynamic presence, or just because of what they've done or they've accomplished, they just kind of bring that clout and that confidence with them. Mm. But what a lot of people don't see, and that I have witnessed firsthand repeatedly in my professional career, is the amount of hours and work that the great speakers you see have put in. So a lot of times we think like, oh, they just popped on the stage and they deliver this great speech. But what we don't see is the hours and hours of practice and the reps, getting reps again and again and again earlier in the career. You know, one example of this that I love to share, when I was working for Dave Ramsey, we had rewritten Financial Peace University, and we had rewritten some portions of it just to modernize it. Mainly, we were needing some new stage design, but there was new portions, pulling in some of the newer speakers into it, as well as some updated stats. But this is literally content that Dave Ramsey talks about on his radio show 3 hours a day. So this is not like this was, yeah, there's a few updates, but it wasn't like an overhaul of the base of the content. So it's a couple days before the refilming, and he stops by my desk. He's like, Eva, come down. I'm going to run through a rehearsal. So I go down to, you know, our atrium area where there's a big stage, and there's, you know, a handful of us listening. And he proceeded to run through his content for six hours. So, wow. I mean, I was envisioning I was going to be popping down there for 30 minutes. And yeah. not only did he run through it for 6 hours, but if he got stuck on a spot, he'd backtrack, he'd redo it. He asked for input of those of us watching. He tweaked, he iterated, he made little, you know, notations on his slides. He made changes. And it was very humbling to me because I think what can happen to those of us who maybe public speaking is not as intimidating and we kind of know we can kind of mail it in and still do all right, or we can kind of throw something together and we can pull it off. To me, it really showed that like you can become good without doing a lot of the work if you have that natural charisma or that natural mm-hmm. talent. But if you want to be great, you've got to put in the work and the reps. And truly, I believe it's a skill just like any other. You grow and you improve. It can be learned. You know, if you're listening to this and you're in your early 20s, mid 20s, late 20s, and you haven't really thought about public speaking for you, I would say dive in now, learn everything you can, because you're going to see it radically impact your career. That's true for anybody. I mean, our 30s and 40s and beyond. But especially if you're in your 20s, don't just brush it off because you didn't like that class. Maybe you took in high school or college, or you've just, maybe you're not even getting the experiences you're looking, going like, well, I'm not even getting public speaking. But like I was even saying earlier, take advantage of those meetings, raise your hand to present something, ask your boss if you can present on the project that you worked on instead of him, you know, start raising your hand and looking for those opportunities.
Mm. I love that growth mindset that you're talking about there, Eva, and even practical examples for how you could get more at bats for speaking and could grow into the communicator that you want to be. And helpful to hear that even somebody as experienced and effective as a communicator as Dave Ramsey is still putting in 6 hours of work for an iteration of something that he was already delivering for years and years and years and years.
And one thing I would like to call out too on the practices, and I cover that in that 12 questions guide, is have you practiced this content in front of a real person? Because a lot of times, you know, practicing is not created equal. Giving it to your bathroom mirror, you know, the Monday morning that you're delivering the talk is not the same as if you had given it to a colleague the Thursday afternoon before. And so have the courage to run through your content through a real person for feedback prior to giving it. You're going to find that they are able, first of all, you're going to get that nervous rep out of the way, because frankly, it's harder to give it to one or two people you know than a room full anyway. It'll get that rep out of the way. It'll help you clarify your content, even time your content to kind of see where you're landing and figure out like, okay, well, what does this need? What does it not need? One reason why we don't practice, at least this is, you know, self-confession, why I sometimes get lazy about practicing, is procrastination. I've waited too long to develop the content or too long to practice the delivery. So like, if you're going to make one change on your speaking, stop procrastinating, like spend time on it before it's the last minute down to the wire, 10 minutes before you're presenting, where you're still trying to clarify your thoughts. Like as much as you can, give yourself a little bit more time to think through your content and practice that delivery.
That's great. It starts with not procrastinating, being proactive about developing the speech so that you can have opportunities, like you said, to share it with other people. I think people are just naturally going to have insights that you do not have. As human beings, we all have blind spots, and they're called blind spots for a reason. It's because you don't see them and you need other eyes and ears on it to be able to uncover what those are. You mentioned that one of those, delivering it, have I practiced it for other people, is one of the questions from the 12 questions to ask curricular speech. And we won't go through all 12, Eva, for the listeners out there that want to see the whole list of questions, we'll have that resource for them. But what are some of the other questions that really pop out to you, or you would prioritize on that list that you'd want to share with the audience today?
Yeah, well, one of the questions is just, does your speech have a clear point, a clear controlling idea? Every speech needs to have one clear point. If everyone walks away from your talk knowing what it was about, what is that one sentence? Because everything you share, whether that's quotes or stats or that marketing research or that Taylor Swift song lyric or that funny thing that happened to your kid or the thing the colleague said, whatever you're sharing needs to drive back to that one clear point. Every speech you have needs to have a point. So that's a big one. It sounds so obvious, but I hear so many speeches all of the time that I leave. I'm like, well, what was the point? And you don't want the audience inferring their own point onto the clarity that you could have given them. So that's one. Another is avoiding jargon. Know your audience and be really cautious of not letting that jargon slip in. When I was early in my career, a speaker gets up and I'm listening to him speak and he was talking about KRAs and all of these things. I didn't know what any of those acronyms meant. And you need to just keep in mind, there are always new people in an audience, new to your industry, new to you. Sometimes, if you really know your company really well, using some of those abbreviations are fine, but clarifying them and giving context to them are really important. Another timeliness, depending on when you're speaking, just kind of having a general sense of what's going on in the world. Is there anything happening going on in the world that I should make reference to in my talk? This can also be a great form for humor. You don't need to become a pop culture expert or like getting on every news site, but just knowing if you are, say, asked to speak in another city, just kind of scanning the headlines real quick to make sure that there wasn't a shooting or something that big that happened there that are at the top of people's minds. Or if maybe you're speaking the day after the Grammys, maybe you make a slight little humor line about that. Again, you don't have to oversaturate that in your talk, but just having some general sense of awareness of, okay, what's going on in the world? Did I share a story? We already talked a little bit about storytelling, but have you included stories? Do you have humor? I worked with a speaker once, and his goal was to share some level of humor line every 3 to 5 minutes in a talk. And depending on your subject, you might not need to have that much humor. If you have an insanely serious topic, you might not need humor at all. But in general, most presentations, most of the time, could use a little humor. And by humor, I don't mean jokes. If you're a natural joke teller, tell a joke. But if you're not a natural joke teller, you're looking for some just levity, some lightness, some self-awareness, something to just breathe a little bit into your content. And then another question is just, did I give space to just intentionally pause? We sometimes get going so fast with our content, with all the things we want to say. I'm doing this even on this podcast. Oh, I have all the things about public speaking I want to say, that we sometimes just need to make ourselves slow down, pause. It adds drama to your presentation. It allows people to lean in. It allows people to catch up with how you're thinking. Also, when you remember to pause, it can help you eliminate filler words because your brain has a little bit of chance to catch up with what you're saying. And so did I give myself space to pause? But as you mentioned, I like to view this as a checklist. So when you're done with your speech, you can run things through this 12 questions and say, hey, do I have a story? Oh, well, not really. I need to add one. Or do I have some jargon? Oh, wow. I guess that is some jargon. And going back through. So the biggest thing is to just realize that you are in your own head and you are very close to your content. Other people that are coming in to hear you speak, whether that's just in a small meeting, virtual presentation, whatever the scenario is, they don't spend all day, every day thinking about your subject like you have. And so a lot of times we're just trying to give to people way too much. And we all have this curse of knowledge where we all get too close to our content or we assume everybody knows these things. We give people in some ways a little too much credit for how much they know about the thing that we're deeply nerdy about. And so just making yourself take a step back on your content, look at it with fresh eyes from an audience-centric perspective. How can I best serve my audience with my content? How can I refine or narrow down or clarify and make it clean and simple and understandable and hopefully at least a little bit entertaining for my audience?
Yeah, man. There was so much value in there to debrief on. Eva, I appreciate you running through those questions with everybody. And I love the practical checklist to be able to go into it. We just talked about preparation and how all great communicators prepare. But I think a question a lot of people could be asking is, okay, I want to prepare, but how do I prepare? And I think this checklist is a great thing to go down as you think about preparation for communicating in any different scenario. To circle back on some of the things that you mentioned, the one thing, the one key point, I think Andy Stanley was the first one that I heard communicate
something
like that.
He's really good on that, like really, really captures it really well.
And the way that he framed it up was like, if you bumped in to somebody in the grocery store 2 weeks, 3 weeks from now that was at your speech, what do you want them to say about it? Like, how do you want them to remember it? Because so many times you get 2 to 3 weeks away from a speech and you're like, I don't remember anything that that person said, because to your point, there was too much in there. I think about Chris Rock has a quote, the famous comedian, that there's something that people will never grasp unless they're laughing about it. That speaks to the importance of humor inside of any communication that you're giving. I want to zero in on one thing that we've talked about. It's been a theme on the podcast, and that's storytelling. You mentioned, do I have stories? I'd love for you to share what makes a great story. So if somebody's listened to that, they're like, okay, I get it. I need to tell more stories. I need to bring in more stories that relate to my topic. But how do they tell a story in a compelling way, Eva, as they're thinking about that?
Okay, well, I'm going to turn on you. Can I do that?
Yeah.
And we're going to, so tell me just a brief story about how you met your wife.
Okay. Here we go. I met Aaron. This was a summer beach trip. I was down at the beach with my family, a couple of friends, and she was down there on her senior trip after high school. She had just graduated. We were walking down the beach, and we actually just had a mutual friend. So there was somebody in my friend group who knew somebody in her friend group. And so we started talking. We hung out with them for the remainder of the beach trip. And then we left that beach trip, and it's just friends. And then coming back to college, I was at a friend's party, and she happened to walk in the door, and we both looked at each other, and we were like, what? We know each other. And so we started talking, and at that point we started dating, then went on a couple of dates, and so it was history from there. We dated for the remainder of college, and then got married shortly after. And that's the story, how I met Aaron. How did I do?
Okay. So let's say we all just heard Josh's story. Let's say that Josh wanted to roll this story into a talk or a presentation. Maybe, I know that this is a little work related, but this can work on any story. So let's say that Josh wanted to, let's just pretend that he was giving a talk to a group of young adult singles at his church about how you too can find love. Let's just pretend he's sharing this story. So what I would suggest, and this is true for any story, but I would suggest take us a little bit more into the details. Now, to be fair to you, I said, hey, tell us how you met. And you did what we all do. You gave the story in a very linear way. A happened, then B happened, then C happened, then D happened. Went on a trip, met this girl on the beach. We hung out there. We met up later at college. Well, if you were going to give this story in a speech, you would just want to ask the question, where should I start this story? Oftentimes, the best start to story is right in the middle. So, for example, in this case, maybe you start at the party. Like I'm at a college party. It's all the things you expect. This, and this, and then in walks Aaron. And I thought, Aaron is here. Where did you go to college? Remind me where you went to college, Josh.
So this was in Tuscaloosa. But yeah.
Okay. Okay. So you know, in walks Aaron. I'm going to this Tuscaloosa, and I think, the beach girl. See, for months I'd been thinking about beach girl, and then you backtrack those details. So maybe you'd start in the middle. Maybe you would start there, but just asking the question, where should I start my story? Other things that we want to do when it really brings a story to life is adding in a couple of more dimensions is, when this experience happened, what did it make you think? And what did it make you feel? So maybe in this case, you're working up this story and you're sharing about Aaron, and it's like, wow, I remember when seeing her feeling excited, or maybe you remember feeling kind of like dread, because you're like, I'm here with another girl at this party and I don't want to be with her. Adding in that dimension of what you felt, like you could have a whole range of feeling. It could be excited. Maybe even add in, you start this story like kind of like a little bit before the party about frustrated yourself that you hadn't gotten this girl's number that you'd met at the beach, but pulling in whatever that emotion is into the story. Another is, when she walked through the door, what did you think? I remember thinking, this is the craziest thing I've ever seen, or this is the craziest experience. So adding in just that dimension of thinking and feeling. And then if you wanted to level it up, even if you did start the story at, you know, the beach, adding in some of those sensory details. So think through your five senses. So, you know, when this experience happened, what did you see and hear and taste and touch and smell? So maybe, you know, that first time when you're walking to the beach, you can still see, hear the sound of the, you know, the waves crashing on the shore. Or you remember, you know, as you're playing sand volleyball, like with her, you know, the sand beneath your toes, or looking over that beach campfire and smelling the smoke, or the smoke, you know, wafting through her, you know, face. But the point is, adding in some of those details is really what it's going to bring the story to life. And also asking yourself with any story that you're giving, hey, is there an element of maybe a little levity or a little humor? Especially in this story, you have a lot of opportunities for humor. It sounds like you guys got married, you know, right out of college, so a bit longer, younger. So there's probably some dimensions of just a little humor you could add, naturally add to the story. You probably also might end up wanting to reduce some details of the story. We might not need to know the context of why you were at the beach, who you were with, all of the things that happened, whose party. You actually did a pretty good job streamlining, but sometimes what can happen in our stories is we give way too many details that the audience doesn't need. You know, we feel like we need to give the context of the party we were at, and the friend that invited us to the party, and you almost didn't go. And you didn't do that in this case. But sometimes when we're preparing a story, let's say we had a totally unrelated story. We're not talking about how we met our spouse. We're giving the story we're sharing with our team, but we give way too much backstory or way too many details. So after you've kind of sketched out or written out or thought through your story, just asking the question, is every detail I'm sharing actually drive towards the point of my story? Because every story you share needs to have a point. Again, you're giving the speech at young adults, you're going to want to ask, okay, the point is, hey, here's how I found love and how you can too. Like, let's just say that was the point of that speech. Well, yeah. The way you shape that story needs to direct to that point. But if you were sharing that story in a totally different setting, then the point of that story and the way you frame all the details around it are also going to be different. So just having that clarity of what's the point of the story that I'm trying to share, driving back to the point. What did I think? What did I feel? Where should I start that story? And what were my five senses doing can really help bring those stories to life.
Man, so many takeaways in that example. Even thank you for putting me on the spot. And I have a whole new framework for how I share the story of how I met Aaron. I can't wait for the next person to ask.
I'd also want to know, like, because I don't know what Aaron looks like. So adding a few of those details, 5'2", petite blonde, or 5'10" brunette, like, oh, then I can envision, you know, like I can't envision her in my head because I don't know what she looks like. So just add those details as well. Or is she outgoing? Is she introverted? You know, so just a few quick sentences of, you know, in walks this, you know, this knockout petite blonde, you know, outgoing or like, then we can all enter that scene and that party with you a little bit more. And so listeners might be thinking, oh, wow, she just riffed a lot on the story. And maybe, like I said, maybe you're giving a business story and it's totally unrelated. But the principles of storytelling are the same regardless of the story that you're telling, the questions you ask of that story, the way you bring it to life.
Mm. I may have to record like a bonus episode where I retell the story of how I met Aaron for the audience just to put all the stuff into practice. But from a business context, I think about how you even communicate change to a team. And it's so critically important that you clearly articulate the pain of right now and cast a incredibly detailed vision of the future of where you're going. And you talking about things like using feeling words and being very specific with descriptors that define that scenario in a way that somebody else could visualize and almost feel like they're there. And I think all of these things that you just mentioned are very applicable in that scenario. I want to hear, Eva, I'm imagining anytime you go to a conference or you listen to somebody give a speech, you probably have your like critical filter on. What are some of the things that you hear regularly that you're like, hey, please do not do this thing. Like, this is something that everybody does or that I hear on a frequent basis that I would just say, steer clear of this, whether it's words or certain ways that they do things when they communicate.
Well, this is now turned into therapy session for me. Do you have 4 hours? No. So a few things, you know, one of the, I would kind of classify these as some of those mistakes that speakers make. So one of them is ending a talk on a Q&A. We see this all of the time. At conferences we attend, someone will have given a dynamic presentation, and then it just kind of ends flatly on a Q&A. the reason why you should never end your talk on a Q&A is because you have no control over your ending. You don't know what that last question will be asked. We've all experienced Q&As where someone pops up and they give a long ramble that's more of a monologue and there's not even really a question in it. We've also seen speakers that just slay the Q&A, but the problem is you don't have any control over the Q&A and what people will ask. You can control how you respond, but you can't control that. And you want to own your ending. So the mistake a lot of speakers make, they just don't own their ending and they leave it to the fate of the last question asker. I love Q&A. Q&A is a great way to engage the audience, but instead of ending on it, set up, hey, I'm going to be taking Q&A and then I'm going to come back with one final thought, take the Q&A and then come back with your close, your 3 to 5 minute inspirational or your story or, you know, the next to-dos or whatever you have as your close, but come back for an official close. Another one is filler words. Filler words and filler phrases can be really distracting for your audience. Filler words like, like filler phrases, my one that everyone's probably heard a lot today, you know, does that make sense? I've got to be honest. These expressions and these phrases creep in and they can really reduce our credibility, especially if they become excessive. In normal conversation, we all use filler words. They say 1 to 2 every minute. So it's not that you need to reduce all of your filler words. It's just that you need to reduce some where they aren't distracting. So knowing what your filler words are, knowing when you use them, most of them us use them during transitions when we're trying to get from one idea to the other, trying to reduce those filler words can really elevate and impact your confidence and other people's confidence in you. Another one is not having good body language. Some fascinating research has been done by numerous people, but we have this natural tendency when we're feeling insecure to make our bodies smaller and when we're feeling confident to make our bodies bigger. And so just really being aware of your stage presence, matching the size of the room that you're speaking in. So I've seen what can happen a lot of times for those people that are maybe used to presenting to 5 to 10 people in a conference room, but then maybe they're speaking at a conference, they're speaking at a 200, 300 more, but their body, they're not maximizing using the stage, opening up their body, gesturing, and really owning that room and owning the stage. So those would be a few that I would say that, you know, are kind of pet peeves of mine. And then again, the forced audience participation that doesn't feel authentic. Most people don't want to stand up and give somebody a high five or put their hand on the person's shoulder next to them or close their eyes and imagine something. I love audience participation. I think it could be done so well. But a lot of times audience participation feels very forced or almost gimmicky. Say back to me. I don't want to say that back to you. Instead, if you can look for ways in your content to really bring natural, authentic, organic audience participation, whether that is maybe an interactive poll or self-reflection for the audience members, or maybe pulling someone on stage with you, or maybe it is taking that Q&A, but looking for ways to involve the audience with your content in an enjoyable way, not a forced way, is going to really elevate your content up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Don't make me repeat random words from your speech out loud.
Yes, I don't want to do that. At least I don't want to. Do you want to? I mean, maybe other people enjoy it more than I do.
I don't think anybody wants to. I think everybody is hearing you share some of those examples and they're reminded of all the times that they've had to do that thing as they're listening to somebody else speak. It sounds bad, but like laziness is the word that comes to mind. How do you be creative about how you engage the audience? Because I think it is so important. It makes it so much more memorable when there's some kind of connection that's happening inside of the communication. So even this has been awesome. I thank you for coming on and sharing all of this really valuable content. I know that everybody is walking away today, going to walk away and be a better communicator than they were when they came into it. And that's large in part to you and everything that you shared today.
Thank you so much. And I think we're all expecting you to do a bonus follow-up of how you met your wife. Now the pressure's on.
I'm doing it.
Long story.
You've got my commitment now. You put me on the spot here, Eva. Expect a follow-up How I Met Aaron's Story as a bonus episode after this one releases. Thank you for coming on, Eva.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you, Eva, for sharing so many practical ideas with us. Our jobs now are to go and do it. Whether you want to seek out more opportunities to practice speaking, better prepare for your next speaking opportunity, build your storytelling muscles, or weave more humor into your communication, I'm excited for all of us to keep getting better. Do not miss out on the free resource Eva mentioned, 12 questions to ask for a killer speech. It will change your life. It definitely changed mine. I'll have it linked in the episode description below. I'll see you next time. Stay saucy, everybody.